This podcast contains language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. We're also going over As Luck Would Have It. We're giving all the spoilers, so if you don't want to know what happens in the movie As Luck Would Have It, please pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
And beware of accents.
Oh, yeah, beware. Be very, very wary of. I'm so sorry.
I sound like Lucky Charms Light, but I'm doing it anyways.
Yeah, me too.
I'm afraid of being problematic.
I know, right? I'm like, I'm going to say, no, that's offensive. I'm going to say, no, that's probably offensive. I'm going to say, no. Are you ready for one dry kiss? Yay! I knew it. I love it and I love it still.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies. We have a Hallmark romance movie recap podcast where we bring you one delightful Augustation libation movie in August. And today, we are bringing you As Luck Would Have It. Woo! All the way from Ireland. Shot on location. Not in Hallmark Town, aka Canada.
Canada. I know. I was so surprised. I was like, if this is Canada, I want to go there.
I'd like to introduce you to my lovely part Irish co-host, Tamara Cosio.
And I would like to introduce you to my lovelier, also part Irish co-host, Corinne Eddy.
Woo!
Do you know where your Irish roots come from, Corinne?
Essentially my mom's side of the family. My granddad was super into being Irish. He tried forever to learn Gaelic, which was an impossible language to learn, as Tam and I have figured out by watching this movie.
I know that my Irish roots come from my maternal grandfather, Ooh. Whose last name was McCoy. I think my ancestry goes back to Arkansas, I believe, around the time of the Hatfields and McCoys. So I'm still trying to figure out if I am a McCoy of the Hatfield and McCoys.
I think that you need to do one of those genealogy kits.
I want to. It's just, okay, conspiracy theory. You know how they say that sometimes that they might use that information for evil and not necessarily good, like finding out if you have genetic traits that make you predisposed to disease or illness or something like that. And they say that I know there's some that they say they won't share, that it's completely private and they won't give it to anybody. But, you know, that's how the internet started, too. The internet's like, we're not going to tell anybody anything about you. And then slowly but surely.
Oh, you mean what's said on the internet stays on the internet?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Completely private. Nobody knows what you're doing. Nobody knows what you're looking at.
I don't have those concerns, so all of my superior genetic information is out there for everyone to see.
So do you, Corinne, have a synopsis for our lovely movie As Luck Would Have It today?
Why, yes, I do. As a matter of fact, Lindsay Johnson, played by Joanna Garcia Swisher, is a 40-something petite redhead with long hair. She is an acquisitions manager for a hotel developer in New York and is assigned to take a trip to the town of Killaby in Ireland, where there is a castle and a plot of land Mr. Crispin, her boss, would like to acquire. And I do wonder why they call him Mr. Crispin throughout the entire thing, because I've never had a boss that I've called by their last name, but whatever. She needs to meet with the town council and see if she can get them to sell. The twist: they're not interested in selling if the castle isn't kept intact. And Mr. Crispin wants to tear it down so he can build a modern resort and spa in its place. Lindsay ends up staying to try and convince the council that she's more than some wheeler dealer, that she cares. How she plans on doing this is by participating in the town's matchmaking festival and all the activities that go along with it. Throughout all of this, she crosses paths with Brennan, played by Alan Leach, a cute 40-something-year-old brown-haired Irish gent of average height and stature who makes whiskey on the side and is on the town council. Will her plan work? Will she be matched with her true love? Will a beautiful historic castle be destroyed? Stay tuned to find out.
I was so disappointed because I saw the whiskey. Not one person gets drunk. I know you said this to me. It's not going to happen. Nobody's going to get drunk. And I'm like, these people, they have the constitutions of, I don't know, like I have a sip of whiskey and I'm like, woo.
That's what happened with the ladies from Let's Go to Court. They each had a, remember I was talking to you about that? They each had a shot of whiskey.
Yes.
They weren't totally blitzed, but like, they were like, holy shit, we did not expect it to hit us like that. And they were a little bit sloppy and very laughy through the entire episode. So, Tamara, do you have any fun facts for our listening ears?
I've had one really, really good fun fact. Ooh, that I found on IMDb. That's all you need. They filmed at the Howth Castle, which in real life is a castle in Ireland that is being bought by an American company and being turned into a hotel as proposed in the film. Mm. So it's like life imitating art.
Nice.
It is reported as being one of the longest continuously inhabited private homes in Europe. The castle's gate tower and keep are from the 15th century, and the estate also includes much of the Howth Cliff walks. Beautiful.
I have a quick fun fact.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Did you know that from September 3rd through 11th, 2021, Liss Dunvarna in County Clare, Ireland has a matchmaking festival?
Yes! We're going to go in there and be like, actually, you guys are a match for each other. Like, we already knew that. No. We want a match of the opposite sex, please.
I'm equal opportunity, but, you know, it's got to be right. That's all I'm saying. Are you ready to launch into the story of As Luck Would Have It?
Yes, I am.
All right. On a bustling street in New York City, Lindsay Johnson is having a business call while she walks to work. She's wearing a navy blazer with navy skinny pants and a white collared shirt. She's carrying a cute large Kate Spade bag and looks ready to take on the world. She walks confidently into her office building, and once there, she's greeted by her assistant/friend, Ellie. Since Lindsay is finally back in town and probably going to leave for Paris soon to officially close a property purchase and lay the ground to build a new hotel, Ellie thinks that they should hang out. Maybe go to that new tapas bar. Ellie's head is filled with visions of a very Sex in the City outing with tasty food and drinks. But Lindsay has other plans. You know, the Met is giving an after-hours talk on mid-century architecture. Eh? Eh?
That girl knows how to have a good time.
I would be there for that, I'll tell you. Sounds good to me. Ellie sighs. But Lindsay is undeterred. I'll treat you to dinner afterwards. Come on. Ellie relents and compromises. Okay. But only if we can go to that sushi place on 81st. They do a high five, excited for the evening to come. It's later in the day, and Ellie's big boss man, Mr. Crispin, a silver-haired British gent who looks like he could be Donald Sutherland's brother, is in full business attire at the head of the room, giving out work assignments in Boston and New Zealand. Then he turns on a large monitor and says, Ireland, the Emerald Isle, a place our company has been looking to have a presence in for years. Well, I found the perfect piece of property in Calabi. See this beautiful historic castle near the ocean? If we play our cards right, we can tear it down and create a luxury resort. However, the town council owns the castle and isn't interested in selling to anyone who would tear it down. We just need to convince them that by building a new property there, it will bring abundance and new opportunity to their community. Lindsay, I've chosen you to make this dream happen. Lindsay looks surprised. That sounds great, but I'm about to head to Paris to close the deal with the Laurents. Mr. Crispin says, you're essential to the success of this. Don't worry, Hannah will go to Paris. I need you on a plane ASAP for Ireland.
Ireland!
Don't you just love it when you've laid all this groundwork to do a project and then somebody comes in at the end and, like, puts the bow on top of it? It's great, huh?
It's my favorite thing.
And then they can take the credit for closing the deal. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I 100% all about that.
In the next scene, we find ourselves in Calabi, Ireland at O'Brien's Pub. Eight people are sitting around a table, bantering and joking. They are the organizational force behind the town's matchmaking festival. Al Roy, a chrome-domed 73-year-old, holds court. Now, everyone, I don't want you bickering over who gets assigned where. Doyle banters back. Ah, get used to it. You've been running the fair for 30 years, and the dynamic hasn't changed a bit. Everyone chuckles. Why are you looking at me like that?
Your Irish accent is amazing. I'm looking at you in awe. I'm like, God damn it, why can't I do that? You sound actually good. I sound like the Lucky Charms leprechaun every time I try it. That's why it's not going to happen. Ugh, jealous. I'm jealous.
I can't wait.
The look in these eyes is envy.
I can't wait for your Lucky Charms. I'm Lucky Charms light. No. Everyone chuckles amiably around the table. Siobhan says, okay, stop cutting up. There's going to be about 1,000 people here in a few days, and we need to get everything in order. Maeve, you're teaching the soda-bread class. Rory, you'll help with the paddleboarding. And Brennan, you're doing Gaelic football and hurling. And maybe a field trip to the cliffs, please, please. Brennan.
Can I just say one thing?
Yes.
When the first time I watched this, the first go round when I didn't have the closed captions on, I thought they said gay football, and I got so happy because I'm like, oh, this matchmaking festival's so inclusive. Oh my God.
It's very heteronormative. It's no, it's not.
Yeah, no, I know. At all. I know, but I was like, oh, and then was sorely disappointed.
Aww. I wish I'd had your vision of Gaelic football. Gay football. Hello.
It was a lovely vision in my head for about 2 minutes.
Brennan gamely responds, sure, I can teach them some folk songs on the bus. Everyone around the table groans and murmurs, no. And Rory pipes up, but maybe Brennan will Gaelic dance this year. Everyone around the table gets proper excited, but Brennan immediately shuts it down. Nope, not gonna happen. You can tell that everyone at the table has known each other forever, and they are all happy to be part of the same community. Back in New York City, New York City! In Lindsay's office, Ellie comes in with pizza, and Lindsay says, thank you so much for the food. I'm sorry we're not going out like we planned, but I've got to get ready for Ireland. Look, she turns the computer monitor towards Ellie, showing her a website proliferated with hearts. Kalabi is putting on a matchmaking festival while I'm there. Ellie gets excited. Ooh, Ireland is so dreamy, with all those cute little towns, and you're going to be smack dab in the middle of romance. I bet you there will be so many hot Irish guys with cute Irish accents. She stares dreamily off into the distance. But Lindsay is not so thrilled. I love this too because the actor who plays Ellie is actually Irish in real life. So she's saying these things about Ireland.
That is so crazy. Her American accent is great.
So good, right?
Yeah. So good.
But she's like, those cute accents. I can't hear a fucking thing. Right? Oh. She stares dreamily off into the distance. But Lindsay is not so thrilled. It's a work trip, not an opportunity for romance. They pick up cheese pizza slices and start noshing. Ellie says, hold on, wasn't your grandmother from Ireland? Lindsay replies, yep, she's from some small town there. This is actually my grandmother's ring, and she holds up her right hand, showing a beautiful silver claddagh ring with a dark stone as the heart in the center. She continues, I wish I'd asked my mom more about her when I'd had the chance. My dad doesn't really know anything, and I'm going to guess the mom is dieted.
I was going to ask. Is the mom dieted?
Yes, I think the mom is dieted.
Or did she go out to buy cigarettes and never came back?
It could be that, too. Ellie responds hopefully, who knows, maybe this trip will be really meaningful. Lindsay gives her a dubious look, and we transition to Irish landscapes.
Lindsay's being whisked to the emerald green hills of Ireland in a cab. They happen to pass the castle Lindsay's company is acquiring, and she says, pull over, I gotta check this place out. On the outside, it looks very castle-y, made out of stone, all square with small towers on either side of the entryway. Inside, the rooms look like they fell out of time. She just walks in through the door without knocking. Did you see that? It's like our typical Hallmark trope. Just come right on in. All are welcome here, apparently, at the castle. Inside, there are ornate moldings and historic furniture, most of which is covered in drop cloths. She oohs and ahs as she wanders through the halls until there, amidst the history and decor, is a man holding a broom. His back is to her and he's doing an impressive jig. She startles him and he says,
"Yes, yes."
Giaguich, which is hello, apparently, and I apologize for my pronunciation. He informs her that the castle isn't open, but if she wants to look around and doesn't mind him tidying up, she's more than welcome. She agrees, and he walks her through the halls and gives her a wee bit of a history lesson.
Ooh.
The castle was owned by the Ballydonald family since the 1300s, and it was a familial home up until 50 years ago when the last family member lived here.
Ooh.
Now the place belongs to the town, lucky us. I don't know this man's name, so I'm going to call him Jigger. Lucky us, the Jigger says.
Because he was jigging with the broom?
Yes, because he was jigging. Because he was getting jiggy with the broom. So, hence he will be named hereforth as the Jigger. J-I-G-G-E-R.
Yes.
Jigger. Lindsay sees the portrait on the wall and asks, is that Roisin Ballydonnell, the founder of the matchmaking festival? The Jigger is impressed and shares, she started the festival to help farmers meet young ladies. Why, Lindsay asks, isn't the festival being held here now? Ugh. I'm going to use that word a lot. It's a catch-all phrase. Ugh. He says, this old place needs a rest. And he pats the wall and a fixture falls to the ground. Oh, gonna need to fix that, he murmurs. Gonna need to fix a lot, Lindsay muses. While he talks on about the town still having their end of the festival party here, she thanks him for letting her look around and is back on the Emerald Green Roads. It's really hard doing it with an accent, but how am I doing so far?
You are delighting me to no end.
A wee bit later, then it comes out in my narration. A wee bit later, she arrives at her destination, a quaint little cottage nestled amongst low rolling hills. She gets checked in by a very nice innkeeper couple. The lady informs her that she has the back cottage, nice and comfortable, perfect for getting over your jet lag. And, the man adds, just in time for the festival. Oh, I'm not here for the festival, Lindsay corrects him. I'm here for work. I got a meeting with the town council. Ah, the man says. But Lindsay just grabs her cottage keys and heads on her way.
I'm sorry, all you Irish people who might listen to our podcast. I'm sorry. Love you. Heart, heart.
As she walks down the path to get to her cottage, she crosses paths with three young ladies who are talking excitedly about the upcoming festival. One stops her and compliments her on her sunnies, which is such a super cute name for sunglasses, and I'm going to use it henceforth.
Good.
All my sunglasses will be sunnies.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, thanks, Lindsay says. I got them from a sample sale in New York.
You're from New York? One girl gushes.
Yep, Lindsay confirms. Where are you guys from? The taller brunette says, we're from Australia, but most people mistaken us for New Zealanders, and I'll be damned if I try an Australian accent. Sorry.
I'm not trying an Australian accent, and also I bet you New Zealanders are like, if they hear that line in the movie, they're going to be pissed.
They're going to be rolling their eyes because it's usually the other way around.
And they're going to be Zealanders. Like, fuck no.
Mm-hmm. They make introductions all around, and she learns that her new friends are named Charlotte, Kylie, and Olivia. But for sanity's sake, I will call them Aussie 1, 2, and 3. They tell Lindsay that they were just heading to the pub for dinner. You're welcome to come with us, Aussie number 2 says. Oh, no, Lindsay declines. I have a lot of work. Ah, come on, it's more fun with the fourth, Aussie 3 coaxes, because she doesn't want to be the last one in line. Lindsay doesn't take that much convincing, and she asks the girls to hang on while she puts her bag down, and they all go to the pub together.
Yay, party!
They go to the pub that we mentioned earlier, named O'Brien's. They nestle themselves into a cozy table. The Aussies fill Lindsay in on how the matchmaking festival works. They fill out a questionnaire, take all kinds of classes based on their answers, and hope they find a match. Lindsay's skeptical. How can they think that this will work? Even with all the people there, what's the likelihood that they will find a soulmate? Well, they say, as we learned in Vegas, anything is possible. They ask her to join them, and she says, oh, I may be too busy, Lindsay admits. I'm an acquisitions manager, and I'm here in an official capacity. My company wants to buy Ballydonald Castle and turn it into a resort. Just as she says that, the Jigger, who we find out is named Brennan, realizes that her sightseeing was just a preliminary snoop to get a look at the castle.
Dun, 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 dun.
He calls her Snoopy and then gives her the cold shoulder while giving the Aussies a round of whiskey. I wasn't sneaking around, she protests. I do my research, and I have very good arguments as to why this town should let us buy your castle. The Jigger guy is unmoved and says, you aren't the first person to try to get this castle, and you won't be the last. I'll get someone right over here to take your order. Jigger must be a waiter, but he is so disgusted by Lindsay's action, he can't stand to be near her anymore. As he walks away, the girls give their condolences on the fight Lindsay has ahead of her and murmur that that guy must really love that castle. But they don't let that spoil their good mood. They cheers and wish her good luck on her business venture.
I wonder what the Aussie threesome did in Vegas.
They had an Aussie threesome.
The next time we see Lindsay, she is sitting in the town council meeting hall, a large room with floor-to-ceiling windows and floor-to-ceiling bookcases. The council of six sits behind a table with interested people sitting in chairs in front of them. Alroy bangs the gavel and calls the meeting to order. Okay, first up is our weekly agenda, and then we will see a presentation from Lindsay Johnson. Lindsay pops up, eager to go, and Alroy waves his hand dismissively towards her. No, no, no. We'll get to you. Siobhan starts in on their weekly agenda. The McElroy's fence was destroyed by the McDuffie's goat. Oh, God. You've ruined my Irish accent.
I ruined your Irish. I'm just sitting here gazing at you lovingly.
The McElroy's fence was destroyed by the Duffy's goat, Maeve points out, allegedly, and Brennan, ever the problem solver, thinks that social media can get to the bottom of it all. Let's see if there are any witnesses. Rory, search all the social media. Hashtag lobby, hashtag goat, hashtag fence, hashtag eat, hashtag allegedly, hashtag McDuffie. Next up, Siobhan continues. The O'Malleys would like a permit to sell wind chimes at the Spring Farmers Market. Rory gets a look of distaste on his face. That sounds really noisy. A couple of other people on the council chime in. Wind chimes are lovely. Brennan has the solution once again. Do you have a wind chime that we can listen to? He understands that not all wind chimes are created equal. And Lindsay is starting to squirm in impatience in her chair. They move on to the resolution on the color of the post office. It shall be eggshell white, but thank you so much for your spirited arguments for ivory chiffon, salted tear, and whispering peach. And I wonder, what kind of color is salted tear? Do you have any idea?
A light bluish gray.
Oh, okay, there we go. A light bluish gray.
I nod decisively to make my point. Light bluish gray.
So it is said, so it is written. Thank you for clearing that up. Lindsay is not wondering this, though. She is tapping her foot. She wasn't as charmed by the weekly agenda items as I was. I loved those weekly agenda items. They were amazing.
One of my favorite parts of the movie.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, you guys are sticking it to her so good in the sweetest damn way.
Oh. Alroy calls the meeting to a close, and Lindsay makes a noise, and Alroy good-naturedly says, oh, yes, the floor is yours. Lindsay hands out pamphlets to the council and gives her pitch on how selling the property will revitalize the community, but Alroy cuts her off. I'm going to stop you right there. We have agreed that we aren't going to be selling to anyone without an agreement to keep the castle intact. You don't really know anything about our community and what it needs. We will pass on the offer. Meeting adjourned. I know. Lindsay walks briskly out of the meeting with Brennan following closely behind her. As soon as they're outside, Brennan calls out, hey, you did pretty good in there. Lindsay, discouraged, responds, I didn't even make it through the first page of my presentation. Brennan replies, we're stubborn and don't let go of things easily. It's not about you. Just then, Alroy, the president of the matchmaking festival, leader of town meetings, and the matchmaker for the festival, walks by with other community members in tow. Alroy says, "I'm just going to the registration tent to help out with any last-minute arrivals." A light bulb goes off over Lindsay's head. Ding! And she says to Brennan, "I totally get it. I just need to show how invested I am." Brennan is puzzled. "How are you going to do that?" Lindsay responds smartly, "Well, it's true I don't know Calabi, and how can I say what's best for the community if I haven't tried being a part of the community? And what better way than to join the matchmaking festival?" Brennan looks gobsmacked. "Wait, what?" Lindsay continues. "Oh yeah, this is perfect. I'm going to go sign up." And she walks off, leaving Brennan stunned on the street. After Lindsay registers, she pops on her phone with her boss. Mr. Crispin says, "Are you sure doing this is a good idea?" Lindsay says, "Oh yeah. The council members run the festival, and through doing this event, I'll get to know them, and then I'll be able to repitch the development." Mr. Crispin is dubious, but Lindsay assures him that once they see her as more than a hotel developer, she'll have an in the community. The property is one of a kind. Mr. Crispin gives his okay, and they end their call.
Maybe Mr. Crispin's a British thing.
There was a client once who came into the office, and I called him by his first name. He corrected me and said, "Mr. Blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Yeah, that's not going to happen." I mean, if it was like an old guy, that would have been one thing, but he was not an old guy. I was like, no.
He was like 27. You're like, "Oh, honey, pompous is not a good color on you."
Yeah, totally. Further down the street, Brennan and Rory are loading up a truck with supplies and chit-chatting. Rory responds to Brennan, "So the same lady that was at the council meeting is doing the festival. Maybe she'll meet a nice bloke." Brennan looks at Rory and shakes his head. "I don't think that's why she's doing it." Rory throws a backpack into the truck and says, "So what if she does the festival? We still don't have to sell her anything. And who knows? She may not even like it. This is a tiny town and she's from New York." Brennan's brain hamster starts working away on that wheel. Rory has sparked an idea. "Maybe she won't like the festival." A light bulb goes off over his head. Bing! And he says diabolically, "Yeah, we'll see how she gets on."
I want the backstory of how Alroy became the head honcho of the town. Because that man's like head councilman, matchmaker, has his own office, marries people. I want his origin story. I'm very curious.
Yes. We get a little bit of his story, but not much.
Later that day, Lindsay is in a soda bread making workshop that's being held in ye old local bakery. She brought a pastry cutter and is at a work table working some dough when the instructor comes by and gives her shit about it. "Ah, you brought your own pastry cutter," she says. "I don't see anybody else here bringing their own." Lindsay smiles. "The innkeeper let me borrow it," she says happily. "I heard it makes making bread easier." The instructor gives her a look of disbelief. "Well, I make it the same way as my ancestors. And the fork usually suffices."
She said fork, gentle listeners.
Did I not say fork clear enough?
Well, you were saying it in a...
I need
an Irish accent. Yo, so there was a fork.
Did I sound Italian? You sounded Italian.
No, you didn't sound Italian.
And in the fork. Lindsay looks a little deflated, but still carries on making the bread when she hears a man say, "You really are trying to impress, aren't you?"
Oh.
It's Brennan.
Damn.
He's giving her shit. And he comes over to her workstation to eye her bread, and she scoots her supplies away from him. As her back is turned, he picks up the one bowl she left behind. I'm thinking it's salt. He puts a few extra sprinkles in her bread, thinks better of it, and dumps the whole container in.
Ooh.
Lindsay is none the wiser.
Ooh.
She kneads, she bakes, she makes a beautiful loaf of bread. Once it cools enough for tasting, she takes a bite and makes a horrible face, just as the instructor walks by and says, "Not what you used to?" "No, no," Lindsay lies. It's delicious. but she cannot hide the fact that that shit she just made is nasty.
That was one of my favorite moments, was when she made the face and her like, she squinted one eye closed and made like a sour lemon face. It was so good.
I liked it when he poured the salt in, because he did a very little, hey, I'm just going to pour the whole shit in. Very good acting in that scene. Stellar acting. The next classes Lindsay takes should go better, right? Nope. We have an intertwining montage of the game of hurling and a knitting class. Hurling looks a lot like lacrosse. There are sticks and masks and a small ball. People are batting the ball around as Brennan, the coach, that can't be good, shouts instructors to the players. In the next scene, Lindsay's in a quiet room with four other ladies knitting. Their fingers are flying and their string is making into all kinds of interesting shapes, except for Lindsay's, whose project looks increasingly like a tangled mess. The instructor is also coaxing the ladies on, giving tips and encouragement to everyone except Lindsay. Lindsay turns to her neighbor for guidance and she says, "Oh, the purling on number three." Whatever the hell that means. Back on the hurling field, a player violates the rules and Lindsay calls her on it. Nobody pays her any mind, so she goes to Brennan to complain. He tells her there was no violation, and Lindsay tells him, "That girl used her hands. You said hands were off limits, and I follow the rules. I am a quick study, and I know what I saw." Brennan, hell-bent on giving Lindsay a hard time, shows her a yellow card and yells, "Referee abuse!" She's undaunted, stomps around him, and says, "Give me all your cards. I don't care." At the knitting nook, Lindsay's ball of tangle has grown. The instructor comes behind her, and Lindsay promptly holds the ball up for her assistance. Her eyes say, "Help me, please." But Shaban just shakes her head and ignores her. The lady to the left shakes her head sympathetically and says, "Maybe just start over, dear."
Oh, no.
Back at hurling again. The game is in full swing, and Lindsay scores a point!
Wow!
Brennan comes behind her and yells, "No point!" Lindsay is heated and argues with him, disregards his ruling, and runs sideways along her teammates, yelling, "3 points! 3 points! We got 3 points!" Brennan accuses her of taking too many steps, and she is not taking his shit anymore. They shout more words at each other, and he flashes her a red card. She balks, and he dismisses her, saying, "Go get a coffee, or better yet, go bake yourself some bread."
Ooh.
Lindsay finally relents and leaves. Her classes are done for the day, and the locals have not treated her kindly. That evening, Lindsay is back in her cottage, licking her wounds and doing some work, when the lady innkeeper knocks and comes in, offering biscuits. After the day she's had, Lindsay gladly biscuits it up. The innkeeper asks, "So, what's on tomorrow's agenda?" And Lindsay shares that she's taken a kayaki, a boudran, B-O-U-H-D-R-A-N drum, and an Irish beer class. And she really hopes it goes much smoother. The innkeeper tells her to keep her chin up. She met her husband at that festival years ago and encourages Lindsay to go to the festival that night. "Oh, no, 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 no," she protests. "That's just for people who are really trying to find a match." "Ugh," the innkeeper says, "you need to stop reading about Ireland and go experience it. My husband and I still go every year. Come, it'll be good for you." She is apprehensive, but eventually agrees.
That night, Lindsay is at the festival gathering, hanging out with the Lady Aussie threesome and comparing notes. The ladies are having a great time, and Lindsay is pretending that she had a great time at her classes as well. The Aussies say, "We're having such a great time, we may just come back every year with matching t-shirts." Lindsay excitedly pipes in, "Ooh, you could stay at the Ballydonald Resort and Spa, if it ever gets made." The Aussies say, "Cheers to that," and they clink their beer glasses. But really, in the spirit of the festival, they should have exclaimed, "Slancha!" A few tables over, the council members are gathered and talking about Lindsay in her classes. Shaban says, "I'm surprised she stayed for the entire class. Her knitting was terrible. I almost felt bad for her." Maeve says, "Her soda bread looks like it tasted awful." Brennan contributes, "Oh, that was me. I may have added a little salt. Okay, maybe a lot." Everybody chuckles, and Brennan justifies his behavior because she should be at the festival for the right reasons. Suddenly...
That is so fucked. They all ganged up on her. Poor Lindsay.
For real. And you know some of those people weren't there doing those events to find a partner. I'm just saying.
I know. Why would you take knitting four older ladies in a class? Like, right? Where are you going to find love? I mean,
yeah.
If that's what floats your boat, like, have at it. But I was like, a knitting class? Yeah. I see no guys in that knitting class.
Yeah, exactly. Suddenly, Alroy steps onto the stage and greets everyone. Welcome! Thank you for coming. Tonight, we're going to start off with a Ceilidh dance, a traditional Irish folk dance. Now, everyone, come on down to the floor. Everyone cheers and multiple people drift to the dance floor. The fiddle, penny whistle, guitar, and boron start playing away, and we get to see a rollicking, in American terms, line dance meets square dancing moment. Lindsay gets pulled into dance and begins effortlessly dancing along. Brennan is off-sized watching the merriment, and when Lindsay sees him, she shouts out, "Come on and dance! Shut up and dance with me!" Brennan shakes his head with a smile. "I don't dance." And Lindsay retorts, "I saw your smooth moves with the broom. Come on." He steps in and they prance and twirl, switching partners as they go. Brennan grabs her for a twirl and says, "I'm surprised you're not studying for tomorrow's activities in your room." Lindsay says breathlessly, "No way I'd miss this." Brennan, enjoying the banter, says, "It's called having a crack. That surely must have come up in your research." Lindsay and Brennan continue to hop, dance, and twirl with each other. "I'm okay with publicly and spectacularly failing if it means I get another chance at the meeting with the council." Brennan retorts, "I hope you don't leave here disappointed." Lindsay gets a big smile. "I usually don't." They grab each other's hands and gallop down the Irish Soul Train line and gallop back. Brennan says, "Let me guess, you watched Ceilidh videos before you came over." They pause in their dancing and she looks at him. "Oh no, this is all me." He looks at her with eyes that say,
"Who's that lady? Sexy lady."
Everybody claps happily and the dance ends. The next day, Lindsay walks out to the square where the center of the festival is. Colorful stands are all around the perimeter. Bunting flags and festive lights crisscross above her head. And Lindsay is looking fabulous in a giant green and purple Ruano wrap and a pair of gray leggings. She approaches Alroy, ready to kayak. But Alroy feigns confusion. "Oh, right, yeah. I'm looking at my list and you're not on it. I guess we overbooked. I think Doyle O'Brien has room in his cooking class," he says, gesturing over at Doyle. "I'm just trying to imagine Alroy, that 73-year-old, leading a kayaking class."
I'm telling you, he's got to have a really great origin story if he can kayak and do it all.
"I know. He does everything," he says, gesturing over at Doyle, who is standing at a booth that has a bevy of vegetables on display. Lindsay wrings her hands. Maybe I can do something else. Baking was not my thing." Alroy chuckles. "Nonsense, you'll be grand." And he leaves her while she stands looking lost and apprehensive in the middle of the festival.
You're being so fucked to her. "You want to kayak? We're not going to let you kayak. You want to knit? We're going to let you be a shitty knitter. You want to play hurling? We're not going to count your points." Like, come on.
I think the shitty knitting was all her and would have been her regardless of the help.
Yes, but when she held it up to the lady and was like, "Help me," the lady's like, "Oh no, honey, you're beyond help." Like, that is the sign of a bad teacher.
Yes. I know. I feel like they're totally mean girling her. I noticed it, but I didn't really notice like the implications of it all when I was watching it. And then when I wrote out the script, I'm just like, oh, they're being awful.
I noticed the awfulness when they were all sitting at the table like, "Oh, did you do that? Oh, and then I did this to her. And then I did this to her." And I was like, okay, hello, high school.
Seriously. Whatever.
Town council, a.k.a. high school, full of mean girls. Shame on you. That same day, Brennan finds Siobhan at the festival booth and asks how things are going. "Our numbers are up from last year," she informs. "That's great," he explains. No, not so fast," Siobhan says gravely. "The numbers are up, but so are the costs. Alroy's still going to need to call a meeting after the festival. It's not nearly enough to start renovating the castle." Brendan, bummed, goes and finds his dad. "Do you need anything before I head out?" he asks. "Yeah, yeah," Dad says. "I have an odd number of people in my class. Would you mind standing in? You'd get a free lunch out of it." Brennan reluctantly agrees and goes to the cooking class just to help his dad out and because supposedly his dad's stew is delicious. At the class, Brennan's dad is in front of a small group in an outside open-air kitchen, dishing all his stew secrets. Mm. He tells a small group, "My garden dictates my soup. Whatever is ready is what goes in, so it's always different."
Beautiful.
Brennan and Lindsay are paired. You're such a liar and I love you. Brennan and Lindsay are paired up as a cooking team and she is mangling the fuck out of a carrot.
What is she doing to that poor carrot? What did that carrot ever do to her?
She's mad at it. She's taking out her aggression from the town council onto that carrot.
I have never seen a carrot treated like that before. Oh.
It was like a cross between grating and cutting. And she was doing it in the air, like slicing at chunks off the carrot.
She was poor carrot. Trying to peel the poor carrot with a knife. And instead, she was cutting chunks out of it. And I was like, honey, you just don't even need to peel that carrot at all.
There's no more carrot left.
No kidding.
And Brennan comments that he is surprised that she chose this class. And I put *... after he fucking sabotaged her soda bread.
No
motherfucker,
kidding.
Motherfucker.
Because her soda bread looked beautiful, as you said.
I know. It looked so good. And then she bit into it and that poor... She explains that she couldn't get into the kayaking class because it was quote unquote overbooked. But she's glad to be learning some authentic Irish recipes. "I've got some Irish in me," she says proudly. And Brennan smiles and said, "Would you like a little bit more Irish in you?"
No!
I'm just kidding. That's so gross. No. He actually says, "No kidding. That explains the stubbornness. I'm genuinely terrified about what you're doing to that carrot." She tells him that she doesn't have a lot of time for cooking at home and generally just tends to eat takeout at her desk. He takes pity on her and gives her some peeling carrot pointers. Like pro tip, put the carrot on the cutting board if you're going to peel it, not jab at it in the air with a knife. After the stew is made, the cooking class enjoys the meal at an outdoor table on the castle grounds. The scenery is beautiful. There are green hills and stone buildings surrounding them. Lindsay's concoction came out pretty decently this time because she had some genuine help and no saboteurs. Her and Brennan are seated next to Dad and a younger couple. Over the food, they get to know each other, and the younger couple share that they're named Laura and Laura's husband because we never find out what his name is. And they met here at the festival a year ago. The luck of the Irish smiled down on them because they lived 15 minutes away from each other in Chicago, were members at the same gym but never met, that is, until they traveled half a world away. Everyone is tickled when they share that they return this year to elope. Laura asks Lindsay what she's doing in Ireland, and Lindsay should say that she's trying to fleece the townspeople and exploit their kindness to get a castle out of steel and convert it to a McResort. But instead, she tells her that she came for work a week ago and decided to stay. And when I travel for work, I'm always so busy. I've never been able to be present and get to know the people, but this time I have. And it's been nice. She's so full of shit. And she's telling her heartfelt lies. Brennan's Irish eyes are smiling at her.
I know. I was like, you know, she's acting like, oh, she just decided to stay here. And I was like, no, girl, you got ulterior motives.
You like, have an agenda.
You totally have an agenda.
I just fell in love with the place. Oh, so lovely and beautiful. And I could relax and not have, like, any problems, trials, or tribulations, except give me your castle.
Now that I've done some team building activities with you, can you please give me your castle? Thank you. That'd be awfully nice.
I was like, okay, that she deserved a little meanness from the townspeople after she said that. I was like, come on, Lindsay. Mm-hmm. You're going to completely lie to that girl that doesn't know you from a can of paint, but all those other people in the council that are there, like, can see right through you.
For real. Later that day, Alroy is sitting in his long, narrow, wood-paneled office with floor-to-ceiling bookcases, covering the walls. He's matching people from the questionnaires they filled out. Suddenly, there's a knock at the door. Is it Lindsay asserting herself for another pitch? Nope. It's Brennan. He asks Alroy, "Do you think we're going to have to sell the castle and the land?" Alroy waffles. "I'm trying to hold off on that as long as possible, but it may be inevitable. I know that Lindsay wants us to sell, and she can make another offer, but we can also say no. However," and he puts his head back down, looking at the match paperwork, "I'm having a heck of a time finding a match for her." Brennan scoffs. "I don't think she's expecting a match." Alroy looks at him earnestly. "Everyone gets a match. They don't always work," he says, looking at Brennan meaningfully. "But perhaps the right person will emerge." Brennan shakes his head. "I wouldn't count on it," he says, and leaves the office. Next, we find Lindsay sitting on the castle front steps, people watching and transcribing from a recipe book. Brennan approaches her with a smile. "Ah, if it isn't the trespassing American." Lindsay looks up, smiling. "Well, if it isn't the guardian of the castle." Brennan gestures towards the book Lindsay's holding. "You doing more studying?" Lindsay looks fondly at the pages. "No, your dad lent me this so I could copy some family recipes to make at home." "Are you doing some more castle prepping?" she says, gesturing towards the toolbox he has in one hand. He replies, "I have several things I need to do to get things ready before the party." Lindsay offers to help, and he agrees. They work on prepping the castle for the closing party, fixing things, breaking things, and hanging curtains along the way. They pause for a break on a window seat, and Lindsay asks Brennan, "What do you do when you're not busy with all your community roles in the pub?" Brennan simply states, "I make whiskey, and that's it. I studied business in college and then came home to work in the pub. I have even brought in some revolutionary ideas. They take credit card payments now." "What about you?" When he was like, "I've even brought in some revolutionary ideas," I was like, "Do they take credit card payments now?" in my head.
That was a really cute line.
Yeah. Lindsay replies, "After I finished school studying design and architecture, I moved to New York City. I wanted to work in a museum, but ended up getting a temp job at the Crispin Group, and it turned out I was really good at it, so I ended up staying and rising in the ranks there. And now I close business deals all over the world." Ta-da! Brennan looks at her. "Kalabi must be high on your list," he says sarcastically. But to his surprise, Lindy replies sincerely, "It is. This is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen." Brennan is thoroughly charmed. "You want to see the best view in town?" Lindsay says yes, and they somehow end up on the roof of the castle. Brennan and Lindsay look out over the green Irish landscape, and he says, "I used to sneak up here when I was a kid to keep an eye on things. This castle means so much to me and the community. If it gets destroyed, a vital piece of the community will be missing." Lindsay looks at him softly. "You're connected to it." She pauses a beat and switches topics. "I should get going. I have more work to do. Thanks for sharing this spot with me." Somebody's feeling maybe a little bit guilty for talking about destroying the castle, I'm thinking. Tamara's nodding her head.
Emphatically nodding my head, yes.
Brennan, who is looking at her softly with a small smile, says, "You're welcome. And next time, we'll hang the chandeliers." Lindsay says, "You're on." And she heads off.
A short while later, they're on a bus tour, sightseeing the beautiful Irish countryside. Lindsay is near the front of the bus, sitting behind Brennan, who is giving the tour. They're about to take off when the final straggler comes aboard. I'm going to call him Chatty Patty. And he asks if the seat next to Lindsay is taken. She says no, and he plops down and talks about how excited he is to see the lush green scenery, and he does not shut his mouth for the duration of the bus ride. He regales Lindsay about the competitive world of mulch and how lucky he was to get in when he did. So hot, am I right?
I want a piece of that. Give me some Grant the Mulch guy so he can talk to me about peat and mulch and all kinds of exciting irrigation things too.
You can have all of the mulch guy. He is yours, girlfriend.
No, I don't want them all. I'm sharing with you. Here, he's yours.
No. That's quite all right. You know how much I care about you, Corinne, and your happiness. I'm just going to let you take him, all of him home.
No. I feel like I need to share this one with you.
You've been single a little bit longer than me. So, I mean, I feel like it's your turn. Like, you can keep him for 5-10 years. And then if you see fit, you can just, you know, bounce him right back to me. And I'll totally take him at that time.
I've already dated the equivalent of Grant the Mulch Guy, or as you call him, Chatty Patty. And I'm going to say that, yeah, no.
Oh, I guess I did too, except my mulch guy was football.
Well, yeah, exactly. And my mulch guy was ostentatious thoughts and novels. So there you go.
Brendan, who is sitting just ahead of their stimulating conversation, listens in and can't help but chuckle to himself. They eventually get to the cliffs of Moher, and Lindsay gets off and ditches her seatmate. She sits in front of the beautiful vista overlooking the ocean, and Brendan finds her and says, "You know, this is the matchmaking portion of the trip." She nods. She's not there for a match. "Then why'd you come?" Brennan says. "To see the cliffs," she says matter-of-factly. "Tell me, a place this magical has to have some Irish lore to it." "It does," he says while gazing seriously into her eyes. "This place has a magical pool that draws every American tourist to it." She laughs and says, "What? So no pirates or mermaids?" "Well, actually." And he tells the story of Mal, a woman who chased her one true love but couldn't catch him, and out of great sorrow turned to stone and became part of the cliffs there, forever waiting for her lover.
Aww.
And I call bullshit.
Oh, okay.
What a horrible story. Why would that be part of your lore? Beautiful stones, amazing scenery and ocean. Some girl died over there because she was heartbroken. She died and she became part of the rock.
That's many a rock story. I don't find it unbelievable, but I want to become part of the rock. Oh, yeah.
The rock Dwayne Johnson.
Yes.
All I'm saying, if Mal was a woman today who chased her true love but couldn't catch him, she would probably just go get a boob job, go on Instagram and live hashtag her best life, hashtag blessed, hashtag don't need no man.
Okay.
She wouldn't jump off the cliff or become stone.
I like your vision.
And I included this story because, as every Irish folklore includes, and then she got some lip injections and they didn't go right. After a while, her mouth looked like an old sweaty pair of balls, and so her love left her.
Aww. Boom, 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 boom.
But I included this story because Brennan says my favorite line that I've heard in a really long time. Lindsay, taken in by his folk story, asks if it's true. And Brennan smiles with a little twinkle in his eye and says, "A little bit yes and a little bit no." And I am adapting that phrase into my vocabulary immediately.
He's so fucking charming.
Oh, my God, yes. I'm like moving to Ireland right now. "Tammy, are you really moving to Ireland?" "A little bit yes and a little bit no." Just then.
Perfect.
Chatty Patty comes along and starts going on about something pointless to a nearby couple. They look as if they're trying to get away from him when Brennan says, "Ah, your soulmate. Should I grab him so you both can take a photo together?" Lindsay sighs dramatically. "Grant the mulch guy? Oh, no." She feigns coolness. "Since we're going to be together forever, it doesn't matter. We can just wait for next time for our photo opportunity." He smiles at her and says, "Fair enough." They walk together, and she asks if he ever knows who is going to be matched, and he shakes his head. "That's for Alroy to know, and he doesn't tell anybody." "Oh," she suddenly has a realization. "Have you ever been matched?" He smiles a little ruefully. "Yes, but she didn't want to stay in Ireland, so it didn't work out. And I don't mind hanging back and facilitating matches for others." He stops and correctly predicts the actions of two nearby couples.
He's going to grab her hand. Those two are a match. They'll stay together forever.
What about Grant the Mulch Guy, she inquires, and he says,
ach, he'll be alone forever unless he hones his conversation skills.
He says, or find somebody who ignores him. And I was like, oh yeah, that reminds me of my Grant the Mulch Guy that I had.
Oh, me too. Except I can recite every single charger statistic for the last 5 years. So ignore. Some of it still like seeps into my consciousness, sadly.
Your mind is like a trap.
I know. A trap full of useless football information and facts now. He asks if he can show her his favorite spot, and she says sure. And that spot must have been really private because we see them walking away and we never find out where they go.
Boom, 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 boom.
They're going to bunk chicka bow now behind a green knoll. Ooh. And since Hallmark does not show that stuff, we don't get to see it. We just speculate wildly.
Yes, we do.
Back at O'Brien's, Brennan is doing a whiskey inventory. They're prepping for the night's crowd and Dad informs him, Tom Murray stopped by yesterday and said you weren't interested in expanding the whiskey venture with them. Brennan says, ach, we talked about this, Dad. I don't have the time.
What?
I just
need to do that again.
No. You're like, okay. Ugh.
It tickles me.
That's the one thing I could do confidently. Ugh. We talked about this, Dad. I don't have the time. We could stand to be without you a couple days a week. But nope. He is not interested. He says he's too busy. He has to help them, and he doesn't want to talk about it anymore. Thank you very much. A little later in the evening, we see Lindsay in the town square, and she sees a jewelry store. She peers into the window, and there, sitting in a little cushion, is a ring on display that looks a lot like her grandmother's. Will this come back around later? We'll find out.
Night is falling, and Lindsay is lured into O'Brien's pub by the live music being played inside. When she enters, she sees the trio that is playing, a guy with an accordion, a woman on the violin, and another gent on the guitar. The bar is bustling, and she sidles up to the counter. Brennan smiles warmly at her. I thought you might turn up here. Lindsay smiles back. Is it always like this? Brennan responds. Every day. Lindsay glances around. Looks like you could use some help. Brennan nods his head. Want to jump behind the bar? Yeah, says Lindsay, and he tosses her an apron. Lindsay has been slinging drinks for a while when Brennan's mom approaches with a couple bottles of wine. You are such a love for helping out like this. Dinner and dessert are on the house, Lindsay rebuffs her. Oh no, I couldn't possibly. Brennan's mom has a look on her face like, yeah, right, it's a done deal. And Brennan says to Lindsay, if you don't accept, you'll hurt my mom's feelings. And then I just flashed back to my dad's house when we were there together, and you're like, we're just gonna get going in the morning, head on down to LA. And I was like, no, actually, we're gonna eat some of my dad's cooking for breakfast and then we will leave.
What makes you think your dad's gonna want to get up early and cook us breakfast? Just then your dad pops in. So do you guys want some breakfast tomorrow?
Yeah.
And he gave us like a laundry list of things he could make. And I'm like, oh man, you know your parents.
Food is love. Food is love. In the corner, tapping away to the music is Alroy. He sees Brennan and Lindsay together and gets that matchmaker look in his eye. It's the end of the night and Lindsay is sitting at the bar. Brennan starts pouring her some drinks. I usually give a whiskey lesson before anyone gets behind the bar, but we're going to make up for it now. Brennan's whiskey attracts people from miles around to their bar, and now Lindsay is getting a private lesson. She says, pointing to the drink he poured for himself, why don't I try some of yours? Go for it, Brennan says, and she takes a sip, but this is not the right whiskey for Goldilocks. Too strong. He chuckles and pours a different whiskey into a glass. Lindsay, ever curious about Brennan and his passions, asks, how'd you get into making whiskey anyway? Brennan nostalgically responds, it's in my blood. This pub is an old distillery, and I find making it to be a bit of a meditation. I aged the whiskey for a minimum of 8 years, so you have to be patient, and when you finally come back to it, it's like meeting up with an old friend. It's worth the wait. Just like you. Ding, ding, ding. He looks at her appraisingly while she sips another whiskey. She likes it, notices it has notes of fruit, and he smiles in approval. Let's try one more, he says, and pours out of a bottle that is a quarter full. She smells it, takes a drink, and says, oh, this is my favorite. Goldilocks has found her match. This makes him happy. That was my first batch. Suddenly, his mom calls from the back. A hand with the dishes, Brennan. Brennan slips off the stool, tells Lindsay that she should drink the rest of the glass. She's earned it. And he walks off.
See, by that point, I would be drunk. If she was like the half a glass and then the other taste, like she'd probably be like a little tipsy, a little woo-woo. And isn't it sad that his best batch was his first batch and he was never able to replicate it?
It's not the best batch. It's just they're all different, you know?
Because
his favorite, like the one that he was drinking, she didn't like at all, but he totally dug.
Okay. I'm just going to say, like, the first one's always the best. Like friends, like you.
Aww. Aww.
My intoxicating BFF.
It's the next day, and Lindsay and the Aussies are walking around town when they come across speed dating. Oh my goodness, we've got to do this, they say. Lindsay tries to beg off, but they convince her to join them. Everyone takes a seat at a very long table, women on one side, men on the other, and we get a sample of the delight that is speed dating. Lindsay sits across from a lovely gentleman. I can tell you're enthused. Should we go speed dating sometime together? That might be kind of funny. No?
I would rather go to the matchmaking festival, sans speed dating. I will knit. I will hurl. I will make salty soda bread. I do not want a speed date.
Ah, that's what I have to say to you.
See, it's a catch-all phrase. Ah.
Lindsay sits across from a lovely gentleman who is going on and on about his hobbies, including water sports and model trains. As soon as Lindsay tries getting a word in, a bell is rung and the men shift positions. We shift to Brennan, talking to a woman across from him, offering words of encouragement to her. The bell rings again, and Lindsay and Brennan are together. Brennan eyes her. I didn't think you'd be into speed dating. Lindsay eyes him back. I didn't think you'd be either. Brennan smiles smugly. Oh, I'm not. I'm here to coach people, give them words of encouragement, and help them put their best foot forward. Lindsay smartly replies, I hope you're a better coach in this than you are at hurling. Brennan chuckles. Oh, well, I hope you're a better flirt than you are at hurling. Suddenly, Lindsay sees Grant the mulch guy, a.k.a.
Chatty Patty,
approaching the table. Oh, no, she says. Brennan looks in the direction that Lindsay is looking and sees Grant edging his way in. You know, Brennan says, we can just make a run for it. Lindsay says, no, we can't do that. Brennan retorts, oh, yes, we can, and pops up out of his seat. Lindsay, not wanting to be left behind, springs up after him and they dash out of the room. Once they're outside, Lindsay thanks him for the rescue. Brennan replies, well, we did leave a lot of people to suffer, but I thought it was mulch more important to get you away. They look at each other with heart eyes and Brennan says, would you like to join me on an errand? Lindsay responds, yes, and they walk off.
I just felt so bad for all those people at the speed dating, except for Grant the mulch guy. Like the guy with all the hobbies and the girl that was talking excessively about her dogs. I was like, that's why speed dating would just be really, really sad to me. I would pity everybody there, including myself.
You get to have all these little snippets of interesting encounters.
Did you mean interesting in quotation marks or... No.
And then afterwards, we could get together and we could talk about everything and laugh.
With a glass of wine as big as my head, yes. Probably.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. You're my designated driver, and I will utilize that if we go speed dating. The errand that they go to is gathering whiskey supplies from a house in the countryside right next to the most spectacularly treacherous-looking waterfall that I've ever seen in my whole life. Corinne says she did not even notice this.
I didn't.
I just about sucked all the oxygen out of the room. It was on a hillside, and it wasn't just like a little trickling waterfall that was gracefully going over a nice slope of stone or dirt. It was like shooting out of the mountainside. It was beautiful and terrifying at the same time.
It looked like a rushing river. I saw it on the last go round because you pointed it out.
Rushing river, but like there was, it wasn't like in a bed, you know, like yeah. It wasn't in a river bed. It was just like, it was like, woo. Oh man. One strong wind, which they say there's lots of in Ireland, would just like make it smack against that house.
Tsunami style.
Brendan and Lindsay are loading the truck when he shares that the owner of the farm does research of the area for the Historical Society and has a database of ancestry from the surrounding communities. Lindsay gasps, "Do you think she can help me find out more about my grandmother?" And Brennan thinks that's a grand idea. They go inside and the historian lady goes into her computer to drag up any info on Ina Duffy. But she can't find any matches. She tries the name Agnes, which is another form of Ina in Ireland, which surprised the hell out of me.
I know, me too.
And they get a match! Yay! Agnes, Ina, tomato, tomato. The childhood home of her grandmother is really close by, just over a hill, and Lindsay is thrilled. "Do you think we can?" she begins, and Brendan finishes, "Go there immediately?" And he smiles, "We absolutely can." They leave on their little adventure to go get a glimpse of Lindsay's Irish roots.
Yay!
They go down yet another windy road to a really small old church. Brennan leads the way, supposed to be here just after the church. They make their way past, and the only thing there is a small foundation, no house. "Oh, it must have been torn down," Lindsay says sadly, while Brennan apologizes. There's a light rain falling, and she said, "I'm glad we came, but let's go ahead and go." And Brennan stops her. "The house may be gone, but let's go where she walked." As they explore, huddled under their umbrellas, Brennan tells of St. Kevin, who founded this area in the 6th century. He was a hermit and was so one with nature that one day he meditated for so long and was so still with his hand out that a bird built a nest on it. "Is that true?" Lindsay asks, and he smiles. "A little bit yes, a little bit no." They continue on, and she says, "I am so jealous that my grandmother got to grow up in such a beautiful place." And Brennan stops and says, "Yeah, now we're just near the ocean. Do you want to have a look?" So they take their explorations down by the sea. And the closer they get to the water, the more personal their talks seem to get.
Ooh.
Brennan asks about her job and how many properties she's built. She guesses 50 to 100, and he's skeptical. "Well, don't you know the exact number?" And she explains, "I just acquire the land. I don't actually get to build the buildings. What about you? How many whiskey batches have you made?" He hesitates and guesses, "Hundreds, maybe thousands." And she says, "Well, which one? Hundreds or thousands?" And he properly responds, "Ach." Whichever makes me seem less like a fanatic. "Well, why don't you make that your main gig?" she offers. "Your whiskey's in demand, and you seem to love doing it." But he scoffs. "I like my sit-up. I don't have time. Things become less fun when they're more official." He keeps piling on the excuses. "I have fun at my job," she shares, "and it's official." But then adds, "But it would be nice to be in one place long enough to see the actual hotels being built. Being there to see all parts, the beginning, the middle, and the end." They smile at each other, and he says, "For what it's worth, I think you'd be grand at it."
Aww.
Bad accents abound.
Let's continue this bad accent fest. After running errands with Brennan, Lindsay drops by Alroy's office to request a spot at Saturday's council meeting. She says to Alroy, "I've made several changes to the proposal to make it a better fit for the community. I hope you give it another chance." Alroy stands. "Would you like to go for a walk?" And now we'll find out after the break. And thank you for joining us during this break, and we will go back to our regularly continued programming.
I want to find out what's happening on that walk. I want to know what's going on. Chicka-bow-now. I said Alroy's
yeah.
origin story. Maybe he's a Casanova of sorts.
Oh.
Wants to lure her away from Brennan.
Lindsay agrees to go on that walk, and we next see them Walking across a green expanse of grass with the castle and the ocean in the background, Alroy says, "My late wife was an American and she was very practical. She was very convincing, too, just like you." Lindsay looked at him. "Is it hard doing the festival without her?" Alroy shakes his head. "Nah. I look forward to it every year. It's what my wife would have wanted. Ugh, she loved Ballydonald Castle. But if she were here, she'd tell me to sell it, as it would take care of the town for years, and it's just a building. She'd just want to make sure that we were selling it to the right person," Lindsay responds. "I understand," Alroy continues. "I'm not getting any younger, and I don't think that we'll be able to restore it. Our town struggles to get by as is, so let's talk about details." They both stare back at the castle, and we fade out. Next scene, Lindsay is in front of the town hall on the phone with her assistant, Ellie. Ellie says, "So, you don't want to sell the castle?" Lindsay responds, "No, I totally want the town to sell the castle, but the town could use the money, and this could be a game changer for their community. But it also means that I'm responsible for destroying an irreplaceable landmark. I feel like a Disney villain, and I doubt Brennan will talk to me after this." Ellie sighs. "Dreamy Irish guy? Yeah, that hurts." Lindsay continues, "Pep talk me. Tell me I'm doing my job and that it's a win-win." Ellie responds, "You're doing your job. You're creating a win-win situation. This is great for everyone. Go team!" Lindsay responds, "Thanks for the pep talk. I've got to go." Ellie says, "You've got this." They say goodbye to each other and Lindsay walks off.
Your little scene made me realize that Brennan looks like a Disney character.
Oh, really? What does he look like?
No, he just like, he looks like he could be in a Disney movie, especially in the movie poster.
Uh-huh.
Like the promotional poster where she's holding the four-leaf clover and he's right beside her. I always thought, I don't know who did the like photoshopping on that, but they totally made him look almost cartoonish. Not in a bad way, but like animated.
I think that he would make an excellent Flynn Rider.
No.
Oh.
That is reserved for...
Oh, she's getting Luke her McFarlane. Fantasy eyes. Oh, Luke.
It's for Luke McFarlane only.
You're right.
Well, theoretically, if there was an Irish prince in a Disney movie, he would be it. Later that day, Brennan beelines it to Elroy's office where he sees Lindsay. "I thought you'd already left," she explains. "Alroy wanted me to come by. I have a new offer and he wanted to go over the finer points." "So when were you going to tell me?" he accuses. She looks down and confesses. "When I got the courage to go into the pub. I know how much this castle means to you, but Alroy said the town needs the money and this deal would take care of the town for the foreseeable future." "All our needs except the castle," he counters. "And why? Because it's time for a change? Isn't that what you said? Building a new history together? Is that it?" "This isn't easy for me," she says. "This is the one deal that I wanted to walk away from, and that's because of you." Alroy comes in from his office and asks Brennan if he'd come have a chat. Brennan follows Alroy, and Lindsay leaves to go find solace in the gardens of the castle. She stands there in the lush green grass while children play around her, and she looks sad and maybe a wee bit remorseful. At the next council meeting, the members are gathered around the table, and Alroy shares that they haven't been able to recoup the expenses for years with the matchmaking festival, and now it might be time for a change. So. I don't know what Alroy said to Brennan in his office, but in front of the council members in the scene, he completely changes his tune.
Mm-hmm. Alroy's very persuasive.
Brennan says, "The Crispin Group has given us the best offer we've seen. And Lindsay, she was here for the whole week getting to know us." "Yes," mm-hmm. Alroy agrees. "And she'll be willing to take our wishes into consideration." The council listen intently. They look unsure, but not entirely against the idea anymore. At her cottage, Lindsay calls her boss with updates and finds that he's coming to Dublin. There's a similar structure near the water that does not have a town council to deal with. I want to check it out, he says. And since we only need one property to start with, I'll be deciding whether we build in Killaby or Dublin. Lindsay tells her boss that she's been working with the town council members diligently, and they are leaning towards a sale. The boss is happy, but says, let me go to Dublin, and then we can regroup and compare notes afterwards. He gets off the phone to catch a flight, and she mulls over this new bit of information. Mm-hmm. She needs to talk to Alroy and his shiny bald head. I don't know why I said that. She needs to talk to Alroy and goes to his office. And Brennan is magically there. I can't tell if he was invited or he just happened to be at Alroy's all the time. She updates them on the new developments and the battle of the properties. Lindsay expresses that she's totally fine if they want to decline her offer, and the council agreed to accept her offer. She's pleased and says, I'll let Mr. Crispin know that Killaby's the way to go. Alroy thanks her and says, well, now that that's settled, I must be going now. I have some nuptials to perform at the castle.
Aww.
By the by, I do need a witness. He gives them both a questioning look. Or two witnesses. A short while later, Laura and her husband are having their small ceremony outside of the Killaby Castle. It's short, it's sweet, and Lindsay and Brennan are there to bear witness.
Aww.
They help the couple sign the wedding documents after the nuptials are given, when Lindsay notices Laura's ring, which looks surprisingly similar to her grandmother's. I love your ring, she says. It's like mine, a Clotta ring. Yes, Laura's husband agrees, and tells her about the symbolism behind it. The crown on top means loyalty, the hands mean friendship, and the heart means love.
Aww.
And Lindsay adds, and the way you wear it means something too. If it's facing out, it means you're ready to embrace love. And if it's towards you, it means your heart is taken. My heart is definitely taken, Laura says, and kisses her new hubby.
Aww.
Brennan asks, so what's your plans for your honeymoon then? And the newlyweds share that they will do a little role playing and possibly some light bondage. And no, wait, they didn't say that. This is a Hallmark movie. I forgot. The newlyweds share that they will dine at the restaurant that they met at and stay at a quaint cottage by the sea that's so close to the coast, it feels like you're on a boat. Laura's husband gushes, it's the perfect combination of old and new. Lindsay feels a little heat near the top of her head. Why, that's from the light bulb that just popped up. She has an idea. She knows how to make the castle renovation work for everyone.
Lindsay stands excitedly in front of the castle with Brennan, her brain hamster running on the wheel at full tilt. Look, we can make the castle the front of the resort and build onto it. This makes it so much more of an attraction than Dublin. There won't be anything else like it. Brennan is wary. I understand how this looks good, but it's so expensive. I doubt that it would work. Lindsay is determined. This could totally work, and I think that Mr. Crispin could be convinced if he can just see it. I can make some projections based on similar properties. Brennan is feeling a little hopeful now. Ask him to come to the party tomorrow. He can see everything lit up and joyful with people celebrating. It'll help him envision it. Lindsay agrees. That's great, but we're going to need a lot of help before tomorrow night, and the castle needs a major facelift. And they walk off determined to spruce up the castle and save it. Yay!
Yay!
Enthusiastic Muppet Arms for everyone! Lindsay calls her boss. You've got to come out to the Killaby property tomorrow, Mr. Crispin. It's the only way you'll get to see how truly special it is. Mr. Crispin is doubtful, but agrees to go. Dublin is looking better to him. Lindsay counters. You're not going to regret it. Please come on out. Mr. Crispin begrudgingly agrees. Lindsay gets off the phone and says to the town council, I know I repeated myself, but differently. Lindsay gets...
I know, Corinne. I'm very upset. I've been perfect this whole time.
Yes, you are perfection. I cannot even come close to competing with you, but I try. Oh, I try, but I just can't get no satisfaction. Hey, hey, hey. Lindsay gives off the phone and says to the town council, who is right next to her, it's a go. They hand out tasks and start working on making the magic happen. Cue the inspirational music. Everyone is doing work around the castle. Booze is being set up. Things are being spruced, and twinkle lights are being hung. when Brendan accidentally whacks Lindsay with some twinkle lights while she is adding dirt to a planter. "Excuse me," she says. "Oh, so sorry," he replies, walking towards her, and then she flings dirt at him. Well, he is not going to take that treatment. He wraps her up with twinkle lights and walks off as she yells after him, "We don't have time for this!" And we move to the next scene.
Amidst all the hard work, the volunteers take a lunch break on the castle grounds and speculate about what the castle will look like after all the renovations. "What will the grand room be like?" Brennan wonders. And Lindsay says, "Probably a dining room or a lounge." The Aussies pipe up. Aussie 1 says, "This place will definitely need a bar." Aussie 2 adds, "Yeah, with old-timey drinks." And Aussie 3 has to chime in because all three need to talk and says, "You can sell Brennan's whiskey." "Ha!" Rory says. "Good luck with that. He's got loads of offers and he has yet to take one." Lindsay asks him why, just as Alroy comes up and asks for volunteers to unload a delivery of lights. Brennan, surprise, surprise, offers to help Alroy so he doesn't have to answer any questions. After Project Castle overhaul, Lindsay goes back to her room to finish her paperwork. There's a knock on the door, and she admonishes the person on the other side that she is chock full of biscuits. "Please don't bring me any more." But when she opens the door, she realizes that it's not Seamus the innkeeper, but Brennan. She asks if he's finished with the castle, and he says, "Hardly, but I thought we could have an early dinner. There's this place I think you'd like, if you'd like to go."
Aww.
They go, and it's another picnic, and this one's in front of a waterfall. Not the same waterfall that was by the Whiskey Shipment Historic Farmer Lady's place,
nope.
But still a very nice one.
It's a less scary-looking waterfall, too. It's more on the pretty side.
More scenic, definitely. More calm.
Yeah, less aggressive.
Tranquil. It's much more tranquil.
Yes.
Yeah, not aggressive. Brendan comes clean about the first day sabotages. How he put salt in her soda bread, denied her that point in hurling. What about the yarn? She asks hopefully. Did you have a hand in that too? No, he says. That was all you. Lindsay says, I understand I came in and you were territorial. More like protective? He corrects. And she says, same thing. But I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like I have a partner in this now.
Aww.
They gaze into each other's eyes. And they lean into each other.
Yes.
They get a little closer.
Yes.
When they hear, "Hey there!" off in the distance.
No.
Kiss us. Interrupt us.
No.
Well, looky here. It's Grant. Mulch Grant the Chatty Patty. And he's got a girlfriend. A lovely place for a picnic, he calls out. And Brendan gives a noncommittal hello. Grant said some things about sedimentary rocks and limestone and is just there to make sure no one's lips touch because he calls, "Enjoy the terrain!" with a winky and a point and is off on his way. They would have been enjoying each other's terrain very much if you hadn't come along, Grant.
Yeah, we would have been enjoying a kiss, too. Gosh darn it.
The kiss and the terrain of each other's bodies.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Brennan smiles and says, "I'm so sorry a fella's got another girl." And Lindsay giggles uncontrollably. "I am so crushed." But she adds, "I do wish them the best." That girl must really be into gardens or landscaping. Or, Brennan interrupts, tuning people out. They cheers to unexpected matches. Are they drinking whiskey at this picnic? Corinne thoughts.
I'm just going to say it's Augustation Libation, so I'm sure it's whiskey.
Okay, they're drinking whiskey, and we're out.
Back at the pub, with the worst computer-generated sign of a real sign ever, Brennan is grabbing a bottle.
It's O'Brien's? Are you talking smack about O'Brien's?
Yes, I am talking smack about that sign. It's horrible. Brennan is grabbing a bottle of his firstborn whiskey when his mom walks in and says, "Oi, thank goodness it's you. I was afraid it was your dad stealing dessert before the party." Brennan responds, "Nope, it's just me. I don't want to jinx it, but I thought it would be nice to have a special bottle of whiskey." And just to let y'all know, Tamara is taking off her bra right now, and I feel compelled to do the same.
You don't have to announce it. That's what I was trying to do it quietly.
Quietly, as she like,
next time,
she like draws it up in front of me. It's a beautiful color.
It was not. I was looking at it.
Mm-hmm. You were like, darn, no, stink. Do, 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 do. Ch-dink.
I would have done a little bit of shimmy, 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 if I was trying to get your attention.
I thought it would be nice to have a special bottle of whiskey to celebrate with Lindsay if it all works out. His mom seizes this opportunity. I don't want to put any pressure on ya. Brennan cuts her off. Ma, please don't. I'm grown and I don't need romantic advice. Mom looks at him innocently. I was just going to suggest that you wear your blue suit because it brings out the color in your eyes. And she walks off.
Have you seen that show Dairy Girls on Netflix?
No, not. Have you watched it?
Yes. A bunch of times. It's my go-to when I'm sad. But The mom in this movie really reminds me of one of their uncles that they avoid like the plague. Uh-huh. Because he talks very flat. And he keeps going on and on. He'll tell a story and it'll be going for about, two and a half hours. And he'll still be carrying on and not actually get to the point. And it's just like... the way she talks in her mannerisms and the way she looked just reminded me of him. So I was like, oh my God, doesn't she look like the uncle and Dairy Girl? No? Okay. When you watch that, I'll ask you again.
Sure. Before the party, Ellie and Lindsay are talking on the phone. Lindsay says, do you think Mr. Crispin will think I've lost my mind? Ellie says, maybe. I know it's a risk, but he could also think the idea is amazing and give you a corner office. That's what I would do. Lindsay says, it's really the perfect solution. Ellie, back in the New York office, is holding a non-New York bagel and says, that bagel was the most unappetizing bagel I have ever seen. It was flat. It looked dry. No. She says, text me and let me know how it goes. I've got to run, though. Everyone has to be at this meeting with a UK company that is starting a preservation initiative. Something that might be up your alley. I'm giving you a virtual fist bump. Good luck at the party, Lindsay replies. Thank you, and good luck making it through that snoozy meeting. The party is finally here, and Brennan and Lindsay are waiting at the top of the steps in front of the castle. Lindsay is nervously playing with her ring, probably because her hair clip game is all wrong. A fancy town car pulls up. Where are the lies? Where are the lies?
A strategically placed bunch of bobby pins that are just kind of like hanging off the side of her face. You didn't like those?
They weren't bobby pins. They were sparkly hair clips. There were three to four on each side.
That looked like bobby pins. They looked a lot like bobby pins.
They were very substantial. But they were special. Because instead of being up higher on the sides of her head, they were down lower near the nape of her neck for some reason. A fancy town car pulls up and Lindsay drops her ring. Oh my gosh, that's my ring! Brennan stoops down to pick it up. I've got it, he proclaims, and on bended knee puts it on her finger while he lovingly looks up at her face. As he's doing this, some people pass by. It's a proposal! Oh, how romantic! See, I told you this festival worked. The people continue passing by, and Lindsay and Brennan chuckle. He stands up and looks at her with eyes. With eyes?
With eyes. With two eyes.
Two. Not just one. Two.
That's how much he likes her.
Oh, yeah. He stands up and looks at her with heart eyes. You take my breath away. Lindsay blushes. Brennan is wearing his blue suit with a white shirt underneath, and Lindsay is wearing a beautiful turquoise dress that looks like it could be from the 1930s. Old Hollywood glam.
With a hell of a plunging neckline.
It does
have a
plunging neckline. Hey.
Very plungy, plungy.
Brennan crooks his arm towards her. Ready? And she puts her arm through his. Ready. And they head down the stairs to greet Mr. Crispin. They enter the castle and everyone says hello and they go back upstairs into the castle with Mr. Crispin. They enter the castle and Mr. Crispin is really impressed with the dancing and the family businesses. He says, you know, we might have to see if we can sell some of these treats in the restaurant. Lindsay looks pleased. Sounds like we'll have a lot to talk about. Suddenly, there's a clinking of a utensil against a glass to get people's attention, and Alroy stands in front of everyone. Falcha Rohev! It's so lovely to see you all here, enjoying this evening and each other. My matchmaking may not be perfect, but it's not supposed to be. I hope everyone leaves here with at least a little something, whether it be romance, a friendship, an adventure, or just a plain old good time. Thank you for being here. Until we meet again, he raises his arms triumphantly and everyone cheers. Mr. Crispin is having a delightful time. Lindsay is standing near a giant fireplace on her own that is lit by candles. And when I say giant, I mean the opening for the fireplace is almost as tall as her. When Brennan approaches her, "How's it going?" he says. Lindsay smiles. "I still haven't pitched him yet, but I will soon. Speaking of pitches, I have one for you." Brennan looks charmed. "Really?" Lindsay continues. "I spoke with Aoife, and she really liked the idea of turning her barn into a distillery at a reasonable price." Brennan's face falls, but Lindsay doesn't notice. "I did some research, and I started a business plan for you. You can still make small-batch whiskey, just on a larger scale." Brennan feels conflicted. He really doesn't like the interference, but he likes the girl, so he says, "That's, something." Lindsay realizes that she misstepped. I just wanted to help, you know, since you love it so much." Brennan tersely responds, "Yup, I do." And Lindsay, unsure of what to do, makes a hasty exit. "I should find Mr. Crispin." Brennan looks at her, feeling conflicted. "Good luck," he says, and she walks off. Mr. Crispin is in front of the castle finishing up a business call when Lindsay finds him. He hangs up the phone and she approaches. "Mr. Crispin, how are you enjoying the party?" Mr. Crispin cuts to the chase. "That was Dublin. They've doubled the sales price and I told them I'd have to think about it." Lindsay sees her opportunity. "There's a reason why I wanted you to come here and see the castle in all of its glory. What if we kept it intact and built the resort out of the back of it? There will be nothing else like it around, blending the old and the new. It would make this a don't-miss destination, and unlike anything you've ever built before." Mr. Crispin looks at Lindsay, disappointed. "In that case, I'll go with Dublin. What you're talking about is too expensive, and not at all what we're looking for. Our company focuses on the future, not the past. Enjoy the rest of the party. We'll debrief back in New York. Ta-ta!" And Mr. Crispin walks out to his car and is driven away. And Lindsay points her head up to the sky, shakes her fist in the air, and says, "Curse your son, but inevitable betrayal!" Brennan meets Lindsay in front of the castle. "How did it go?" he says hopefully. Lindsay, disappointed and frustrated, says, "It didn't." He looks at her in disbelief. "That's it? No sale? No nothing?" Lindsay responds, "He said that our company isn't equipped to take on something like that." Brennan is stunned. "I'm so sorry. I really thought this was going to work." Lindsay shakes her head sadly. "I guess I have to go back to New York now. It's not like I have anything to stay here for." She looks at him with hope in her eyes, and he replies, "No, of course." She starts tearing up, and he says stoically to her, "You should go back inside. I know people are going to want to say goodbye to you." She says, looking away from him, "I will. Just give me a sec." And he leaves her alone as she stands in front of the castle under the twinkle lights by herself, her eyes welling with tears and fireworks going off in the background. I see you're looking a little misty-eyed there. Did I make you cry?
Yes, my God. That's so touching.
The next day, the festival's over and everyone is saying goodbye. Okay, not everyone, but the Aussies, the innkeeper, and Lindsay. Aussie number two found a match with the local, I think I was trying to say Rory, but I spelled rough. My spell correct put rough. With the local Rory, all the Aussies thank Lindsay for coordinating the castle facelift project. Doing it really made them all feel like part of this place. The girls leave and Lindsay gives a heartfelt speech about the right buyer coming to renovate and save their castle. "Ah," the lady innkeeper says, "You can stay at our castle now, love." She thanks them and leaves. And do you know who's not there? Brennan. Where's Brennan? Why, he's where every man should be when the woman he cares for is leaving forever. He's leaning on a castle wall, having words with Elroy. Elroy's doing his best to give the bastard a pep talk. "Change is good, inevitable. I'm a matchmaker, but sometimes even I'm surprised. Lindsay, she is a surprise." "Ah," Brennan says, "it wasn't meant to be. And I'm not ready for yacht love yet. And besides, she doesn't want to stay in Ireland, so what's the point?" He's saying all of this over a reel of Lindsay driving off in a cab forever, forever, forever.
Or not. 3 months later, Lindsay's doing the same old, in her office building, doing company things. But this time she's going to Australia to acquire some land, but she seems distracted in the meeting where they're hashing out the details. Her boss is at the table droning on about property acquisitions, yada, 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 and her mind is somewhere else. Lindsay, Mr. Crispin says, and she snaps back into work mode and says all the things she should about, I have an existing relationship with those developers in Australia. I'll be ready to hit the ground running. She also lets her Calabrian Aussie friends know via text that she's coming and they are thrilled. But other than that, it's business as usual. Later in her office, Lindsay takes off her grandmother's ring and looks at it, remembering all the time she had in Ireland. Aww. She peers inside the ring and sees an engraving. Calabri, she says, surprised. This whole time she never knew that the engraving was a mark for a jeweler in Calabri. Why, she belongs there after all. Ellie comes in and announces that she scored tickets to the Egyptology exhibit, and Crispin also wanted her to ask Ellie to check over some specs on a property. I don't think I'm going to do that, Lindsay says. And Ellie, confused, asks, do you want me to have somebody else take over? And she says, no, I think I'm going to quit. Ellie says, I'm sorry, what? Yeah, Lindsay says, there's always going to be a deal to make or a flight to catch. For once, I want to be part of the process, not just the bread on the outside of the sandwich. I want some meat. Where will you go? Ellie asks, but Lindsay has no idea. She just knows it won't be here, and I am excited to find out. Back in Ireland, Brennan is refurbishing a barn into a distillery, and his dad comes by with lunch and asks about a second investor. A goin', Brennan says. So I'll be able to open up even earlier. He also gives his son a box of photos to adorn the walls of his new venture, one of which is the group photo from the Matchmaker Castle overhaul. And, Dad adds, Alroy wants to see at the castle later on. Brennan looks at the photo quickly and tucks it away. He drives to the castle a little later and finds Alroy going over castle plans with Lindsay. Ooh. They gaze into each other's eyes and he asks, what are you doing here? I'm renovating the castle, she says. My new company was looking for a restoration project, and when I told them about this place, they jumped at the chance to fix it up. Alroy excuses himself, always the matchmaker, that man, and Brennan sighs. Ha! I never heard back from you. I know, she agrees. I just thought it would be easier. He pauses. I shouldn't have let you leave the way you did. You're right about everything. I started expanding my whiskey distillery. Turns out that taking a chance isn't so scary when you're doing something you love. Well, she shares, I'm going to be here for a while overseeing this project, and until then, I'll be doing smaller things based out of the UK. So we can go back and forth? He says hopefully. Well, why would we do that? She asks. Ach. Because I need a taste tester, he informs her. Or a whiskey pourer. He takes her hand in his and he notices her grandmother's ring. It was made in Calabi, she tells him. It was engraved with the local jewelers, but it winds up it's facing the wrong way. They both look down at the ring and he asks, Ach, does this mean you're taken? And she whispers, I hope so. And they look into each other's eyes. And they kiss.
Yay!
And it starts off good. And then it gets all stutter-steppy. And then it winded up being a strong start with a fizzle finish, but better than a lot of kisses I've seen in Hallmark movies. So it's an okay kiss. The end.
Yay! Speaking of kisses, how many dry kisses would you give this here movie?
This movie was so hard to tell because accents, very bad accents. But the writing was really good, so I didn't have like a whole lot of crap to talk about. Not that I look to talk about crap, but generally I like speaking about things that, you know, are kind of unusual. And this was like a really good story. The stakes were high. I felt invested in the characters. I believed them. Sometimes they flippy-floppied. Like, I liked Lindsay at times, and at times I didn't like her, and I liked Brennan at times, and sometimes I didn't like them. But I would say I really enjoyed the story. I watched it 3 times, and I could probably watch it a few more times. I'm going to give this 4.5 kisses.
Oh, nice.
You made a disgusting face when I said that.
No. I'm fine with your 4.5 kisses. It's a good movie. I agree. It didn't have as much for us to riff on. For me, typically we talk about race in the Hallmark movies, and This one, not going to really do that with, because I looked at the demographic population of Ireland, and over 90% of it is white. So just cutting them a break on this one, since it was recorded in Ireland and whatnot. But the movie and everything like that, it was better than average. I liked the atmosphere and everything like that. The whole Ireland thing was lovely. It made me want to go there, even though I know it like
me too
rains like crazy, but at least it's green, so there's that. I give it 4 dry kisses. It's not a movie that I would ever watch again, because it's way too anxiety making for me. Too many emotions are involved in this movie. Not into it. So while I did enjoy watching it, it's not something that I want to rewatch because it's too stressful. So
I also think too that my half a over 4 rating is because I like location movies, yeah, and history and a little bit of like actual realness kind of folded into the story. Mm-hmm. And this had all of that, which I really enjoyed and appreciated. And I also want to go to Ireland. Let's go together.
Sweet. Well, you know, when we do our pod tour, we'll definitely go to Ireland.
No, they're going to throw cabbages at us for all our bad accents.
So 4 dry kisses for me, 4.5 for you. Next week, we're going to be doing the movie Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, nice. Is that because it's the 5th Tuesday?
It's the 5th Tuesday in August.
I like that movie a lot. I'm mm-hmm. happy to go over it. So please rate and review us if you can, wherever you find our podcast. We appreciate 5-star ratings. Or if you'd like to reach out and let us know anything you'd like to say, have a movie request or whatever, please reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com.
And you can hit us up on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at onedrykiss.
So we thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. And as always, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah. Goodbye.
We'll see you next time.
How's it going there, Tam?
God damn it. It's going not good. Not good at all.